As Pastor Larry shared last week, the story of Matthew has lots of twists and turns. We see the disciples doing good things. We see the disciples doing bad things. We see Peter making incredible confessions of faith, and then Peter saying and doing stupid things. You know, it feels like I'm just watching my own spiritual life play out in front of me. And so today we get to see this story. And this story of the Transfiguration has a lot of meaning. It unfortunately brings up for me more questions than answers, but it really focuses us in on what is important. Now, we don't often have a hard time coming to the conclusion that Jesus is God. As we read and already know the story, we know that he was born in special circumstances. We know that angels heralded his birth. We know that he performed tons of miracles, miracles that were really impactful to the people that they were addressed to. He could raise the dead, heal the blind, cast out demons, cause people who hadn't walked in years to actually walk. And then he was crucified, killed, put into a grave for 3 days, and then came back to life. Normally, people don't have a problem with Jesus's deity. What we always have a problem with, it seems like, is Jesus' humanity. We have a problem that Jesus he got tired. He got hungry. He went to the bathroom. He had girls have crushes on him. He probably had acne. I don't think acne is a sin, so I'm going to call it Jesus probably had acne. Jesus was just a regular person, and sometimes we have a hard time with that. Now, the situation we find ourselves is the exact opposite of the people who lived during Jesus' time. When they walked around Jesus, they saw his humanity. They saw him eating and drinking. They saw him getting tired and yawning. They saw him lay his head down and fall asleep. They knew very well how human he really was. They saw how human he was when they put nails and put him into his hands and he bled like a normal human being. When he was hit and struck and welts would appear on his eyes, they said, that's human. He's human. Sometimes the early church had a problem with Jesus' divinity. And that's the reason why the Transfiguration really highlights the fact that Jesus is God. It harkens back to several other stories, one of them in the Old Testament, and then one of them that happened right when Jesus came on the scene. And there's a purpose to this. So as we go through this, let's see if we can figure out what the purpose of this and maybe understand some other things as well. Yeah, this thing is going down. That's really crazy. And that's why it's because my Bible's so heavy. It's just filled with all of God's good word. All right, but I got a microphone. I got eyeglasses so I can see it even if it's lower. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up on a high mountain by themselves. Question, why these three? Why Peter, James, and John? They're the biggest what? Yeah, they're the biggest knuckleheads. I actually honestly believe this. Peter is always having a problem with saying the wrong things. And usually, as I've said before, teachers will normally take their problem students and put them in the front row. Yeah, and over here too, yeah. That's why I think Peter, James, and John, a lot of people say, well, isn't this story of the Transfiguration, isn't it helpful to grow the faith of the person experiencing this? And I remember as I was thinking about this, I said, who would have benefited from seeing Jesus transfigured in all of his glory? Wouldn't all of the disciples really benefit? Thomas might have been a really good one. The doubting problems he had later. Judas actually seeing Jesus as God, wouldn't that have maybe changed him? What about all these other poor disciples? We don't even know their names very well because there's two separate lists, and so they went by different names, and so it's hard to even know, and they didn't do much. I wonder, why didn't Jesus bring them along? And again, I think there's a lot of stuff we could speculate all the livelong day of why. But we know that Peter, James, and John did constitute what we'd call the inner three. So this inner three was a group that Jesus spoke to frequently on a much more personal basis. I think it was because they were troublemakers. Maybe they had the lowest amount of faith and they just really needed that extra encouragement. Maybe they just had doubts beyond what other people had, maybe even more than Thomas. And so Jesus was always bringing Peter, James, and John. And they go up on this mountainside and they're going up for the purpose of praying. Verse 2. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. And again, I have the question. It bugs me. I need more detail. How did they know it was Moses and Elijah? What was that? Jesus said, "Hello, Moses. And how are you doing? Are you watching? Elijah." Are we all clear on this thing? I mean, did they have name tags? They had name tags because Jody loves name tags. Do we want a quick little poll? Who here would actually wear a name tag if we provided them? Like six of you people. Okay, we're going to get six name tags for you. No, I'm just kidding. How did they know it was them? I get the feeling that somewhere along the way, there was some sort of discussion. We have so much of this missing. Jesus is transfigured. In the original Greek, he was metamorphosized. He changed in his appearance, and he became dazzling white. Now, the white often refers to the fact of someone's holiness or purity. Angels often appear in white. Jesus shows up as white. Also, in the Old Testament, Moses went up onto a mountain to receive the Ten Commandments and communed with God. And when he came down off the mountain, he actually had to put a veil in front of him because he was glowing as well. And this, of course, then does answer the question, does Jesus glow? And the answer is only on the Mount of Transfiguration, not during any other time in his life. So Jesus is now changed, and this appearance would have been absolutely spectacular. This caused the disciples quite a bit of consternation. We don't have the entire story, though Matthew's is the most detailed. We know a couple other things. First of all, we know that this happened at night, which makes it a little bit creepier, that all of a sudden you're asleep, and all of a sudden this light turns on, and you're bothered by it. Like, did I just sleep through the whole night? Is the sun already? And then there's Jesus. You know, if I were Peter, I'd be like, Jesus, can we like turn down the brightness? It's just a little bit too bright for me. And it, usually when you end up getting woken in that kind of manner, it drives me nuts. I used to have a problem with our oldest son, Mark Thomas. I don't know why he did this. We would be asleep, dead asleep, and I have no idea. When he was a lot younger, when he was like 6 or 7, he would sneak into our bedroom and then turn on the light and then run away. You laugh like that's funny, Joshua. Like, it's not funny. It's terrible because all of a sudden you're like, what? Wait, what? What? Ah! Oh, someone, why is the light on? Is there someone in my house? This is creepy. And so finally, we started getting into the habit of when we would go to bed, we would just simply turn off the light that the light switch was connected to. So then the next night, we hear this click, 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 click. And he finally gave up and he stopped turning on the light. So we were very thankful for that. But this is what made it very challenging for the disciples, because the disciples are actually half asleep when all of a sudden God does this incredible, amazing thing and is transfigured before them. And now we got Moses and Elijah. I am not going to even speculate. I'll give you the quick seminary answer of why Moses and Elijah. Most people believe that those two are the best representatives of the Old Testament, the law and the prophets. A lot of people have a lot of other things that they want to throw in there. It's all pure speculation. Again, it helps us, though, with the continuity with the Old Testament. So it doesn't actually say it here, if I'm correct. Yeah, so it's another gospel that they talk about Jesus' coming death, which would, again, be kind of a little bit disconcerting. I'm a disciple. I'm Peter, James, or John. There's a bright light. Holy cow, what happened to my Jesus? He's glowing. And who are those two people? You finally get through the grapevine. It's Moses and Elijah. And Moses and Elijah are talking to Jesus about his upcoming death. And again, how many times has Jesus referred to this fact that he's going to die and come back to life? It just happened last week, if you remember. It just happened. And so Peter, James, and John need to again hear that Jesus is going to die. And there's nothing that can actually be done about it. But it was this point where I actually realized something. Someone else said it, and I never even thought about it. Because a lot of times we say the purpose of the transfiguration was to impress upon the disciples that Jesus is God. What if there was a secondary purpose? What if one of those purposes was to strengthen Jesus for his upcoming death? I never thought about it, that, you know, usually this is a story for us, but could this also be a story for Jesus? That Jesus was about to go the way of the cross. We know that several times as he prayed, he was ministered to by angels. After his temptation, ministered by angels. At the Garden of Gethsemane, angels were ministering to him. And he needed, in that humanity, he needed strength. That no matter how strong he was as God in the flesh, there was this weakness that he struggled with because he was also human, just like you and me. Which meant that it was very difficult to say to yourself, I am about to die. And also being God, being all-knowing, Jesus would know the exact things that would be happening to him and the torture that he was about to receive. Now, yeah, I don't ever want to know this. I do not want to know how I'm going to die. I think that would freak me out. It might embolden me in other situations. You know, if I know I'm going to drown, then, you know, I can maybe, you know, skydive as long as it's not over the water. And I'm pretty certain I'm going to actually be alive. I can do the running of the bulls at Pamplona and realize I'm probably going to be alive because I'm not going to die. But this would be a very challenging thing. If you think about that sort of knowledge, Jesus is talking about his upcoming death and he needs strength. He needs help. I think it's also a help for the disciples. Peter, and again, we love Peter. Peter opens his mouth. You know what? There's a lot of you like this. You know, it's quiet. You know, something important is happening, and you just feel the need to say something. Like, why is that? I don't know why. I don't know why you have that problem. That's just terrible. Peter opens his mouth. Lord, it is good for us to be here. Thank you, Peter. Captain Obvious, that was very fantastic. Very helpful to understand that it's good for me to be here. It's good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. Now again, commentators then just start hammering poor Peter. Like, I read two commentaries and heard one pastor say, Peter is committing this horrible sin because he's putting Jesus on par with Moses and Elijah. Does it sound like he's putting Jesus on the same par as Moses and Elijah? No, I think Peter, and we know it from another gospel, it actually says, and Peter didn't know what he was saying. I think he was just talking. Some of you are like that, the nervous talkers. Like, oh, I just got to keep saying something. I just got to keep talking. That's why most of you then turn into pastors, because that's what we want to do. We just want to talk. Talk, 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 talk. Yes? Yeah, one thing that we're unsure of, and this is why I have a feeling that some of the stuff is truncated, is because I don't know how much they actually overheard the details. All we know from one of the gospel writers is that they were talking about his upcoming trip to Jerusalem and when he was going to die. But we don't have a whole lot more. And again, it was at night. They were awoken. They kind of look over. There's a glowing dude. We think he looks like Jesus. Two other guys, and they have long beards and robes, so they must be from the Old Testament. And so they overhear something, but we don't have any of the details. And again, I think there would be a reason for it. With the details, we'd focus on the details. With the story the way it is, we're going to focus on just the fact that Jesus was transfigured, and what the response of the disciples was. Now, I'm one that sometimes doesn't like making things into an analogy or an allegory, but this is one where I think it actually fits. How many of you have ever had an encounter with God that just radically changed your life? Many of us have. Something that was big. You might not have had just one. You might have had several. I know of someone who talked about how she had had a visitation by God. She says, I cannot describe it. Words cannot help me convey it to you. All I know is it was God. And I don't care if they come with ironclad proof that God does not exist. I don't believe it because I believe that God is real. When you have those moments, how sweet are they? They're wonderful. How many of you, when you had your encounter with God, it was a good thing? Like, you wanted more of it. How many of you have wanted to have an encounter with God in this way? Anyone? Anyone want it? Anyone would love to see Jesus transfigured. Like, Jesus walks in, and he's like, okay, I'm here now. Watch me. I'm going to glow. Bam. And he starts glowing. Who here would like to see that? Yeah? Okay, I know I would. Well, the problem is, where are the other nine disciples? The other nine disciples didn't get a chance to get this. Again, some people are like, well, how come God shows himself in glory to some and not to others? Well, he's God. He gets to do whatever he wants. That's his prerogative. For some people, they are going to be changed because of this encounter. And if you have not had an encounter like that, chances are you may not need it for your spiritual growth and anchoring your life and faith in Jesus Christ. One's not better, one's not worse. We're all just different. So Peter, seeing Jesus in this way, is essentially trying to say, I want more of it. And this is one of those challenges again, because whenever you've had, and this is again where I think the allegory, I hate talking this way because I think it sometimes sounds cheesy and stupid, but in this particular story it works. You've had a mountaintop experience. It is something that has changed you. You have seen Jesus in a way that you have never seen him before. You maybe understand things that you've never understood before. You have been so radically changed that the glory that God has is now seen in your countenance, in your physical nature. People see you and they go, what's different? Why are you acting this way? Why do you talk this way? What has happened? And you say, Jesus has changed my life. This is what's happening with Peter. Now, question, if you've had an encounter like this, does this mean you will never experience doubts again? No. Because what happens a little bit later on with Peter? Yeah, he forgets. He gets pressured. He gets cornered by some people. And he's fearful. And the fears of other people's opinions and the fear of losing one's own life outshine the glory of Jesus Christ. A lot of people get addicted to mountaintop experiences. I tell you, they're a thrill. Maybe it's when you went to a men's conference and all of a sudden you had all these men around, and somehow or other, what the guy was speaking on the stage, he wasn't speaking to all those other guys. He was speaking right to me. Or maybe you're on a women's retreat and you're up in the cabin in the woods with other women and you finally get a chance to share what's going on in your life and you have such ministry happening to you that it's as if God himself is speaking to you and sharing his love and forgiveness. Youth have this. Whenever we take them to the National Youth Gathering, there is nothing quite like having 35,000 teenagers all singing the same song. The teenagers often wondered, I don't think there's 35,000 Christian teenagers in the world because I can't find even one of them in my school. And all of a sudden they go there and they're like, wait a second, I'm a part of a tribe, I'm a part of a nation, I'm a part of a group of people. And then they hear what's going on the stage and they hear what the speakers are saying and they're ministered to by the people that are there and they walk away often from that, they just radically changed. I remember my experience, it was 1989. And I went to the National Youth Gathering. We were in Colorado. And everything got different for me, especially on the day that we had probably one of the greatest tragedies of the National Youth Gathering that ever took place. It was during this outdoor amphitheater time. It was in Red Rocks Amphitheater. And while they were out there, they were doing this. It was an outdoor worship service. They took all these school buses, bussed all of us kids all up to this huge amphitheater. And while they're there, a storm rolled in. And it was funny because the guy who was the MC kept saying things like, oh, the storm's going the other way. Don't worry, the storm's going the other way. And all of a sudden, we're all outdoors. We got all this electrical equipment. And all of a sudden, the rain just opens up and God just dumps all onto us. And of course, all the students, not knowing what to do, we said, let's get back to the bus. So we all started running back to where the buses had dropped us off. Well, the problem was that's not where the buses were going to pick us up. The buses had actually moved to a total another area because it was easier. It was in the backside of the amphitheater. They were going to go there to pick us up, but no one let them know, and no one told the kids. So all the kids are starting to run down, and all the buses are trapped up there because one of the buses then got stuck because it was muddy, and they couldn't get there. So then they started calling the city buses from Denver, and they started getting them up there. And it was interesting. A bus would show up, and 50 wet, cold, shivering teenagers would get on. And the bus driver would be like, well, where are we going? And then someone would say, well, we're going to this hotel. Well, no, I'm at this hotel. No, I'm at this hotel. There's 50 kids, 50 hotels. And it was so funny because I remember there was one of them. I had hid for a while underneath some cars because it was pouring so badly. And then I remember when I got into a bus and some teenagers started screaming and yelling at the bus driver. And I'm like, stop yelling at the bus driver. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's here to help us. We'll get you every so. Then we get back, and I'll never forget when we pulled into the hotel. There were hundreds of workers there. Somehow or other, the news got back to all of the hotels that you're going to have a ton of wet teenagers starting showing up. And I showed up, and there were hundreds of workers out there with towels and hot chocolate. Come on. Here you go. Yeah, are you good? Is this your hotel? Do we need to get you to another? This isn't your hotel. We're going to get you. You stay right over here. I know how to get you. Yeah, come on in. Oh, this is your hotel? Who's your leader? Okay, they haven't shown up yet. It was amazing because of all of this incredible love that was poured out. And it's funny, out of all the things that I remember out of that 1989 thing, the thing I remember most was the love of people who were not even part of my tribe showing love to me as a teenage boy. It was incredible. When you have those, I've always wanted to repeat them. Have you ever done that? Like something really big happened to you and you're like, I want to experience that again. You know what I'm talking about? Hard part, sometimes God isn't going to do that. Sometimes God is not going to repeat it. With Peter, James, and John, they're going to repeat it he's going to repeat something in the fact that it'll be the resurrection and it'll be something incredible. But for Peter, James, and John, they got to see the sneak peek of who Jesus was. And they needed it because they were about to go through some really rough times. First of all, their theology was totally bad. They had no idea that Jesus was going to come and die. They're really struggling with that concept. So Jesus is like, I need to impress upon you that this is happening. They're going to have a real struggle with the whole idea of Jesus' return and what that actually means. And so God had to give them something. And it was them and only them. Now maybe you haven't had anything. Maybe God hasn't shown up to you. And you're jealous because you hear of all these other stories of other people having this incredible encounter with Christ and you haven't had it. And maybe you think to yourself, I'm a second-class Christian. And the answer to that is no, you're not. You're not a second-class Christian. You're simply one that doesn't need that in order to have the faith. Later on, he even tells Thomas, blessed are those who believe but have not even yet seen me this way. It's also a wonderful, wonderful thing because later on, the same terminology is used where it says that God is going to transform our lowly bodies to be like his body. I'm going to glow. I'm so excited. Because sometimes it gets hard in this body, right? I am sure Heather is going to be so excited to get new teeth when she's in heaven. No more infections or root canals. Some of you are like, I just want a new hip. Or I just need a new knee. I just need something to get me past. You will be transformed. It will happen. And your body will be like Jesus' body. It's going to be amazing. All right, we got to keep going. So Peter is, as he is speaking this, saying, Lord, it's good for us to be here. There is no rebuke from Jesus. That's what makes me wonder that maybe what Peter is saying here is not bad per se. It's just a little misguided. Does Jesus have any problem rebuking Peter when he says something really terribly stupid? No, he just did it. He just did it last week in the story. He was like, "No, you're not thinking correctly on this." And Jesus does it other times too. So it's not Jesus that says, "Peter, what are you doing?" In fact, it's actually God Himself, God the Father. While He was still speaking, a bright cloud enveloped them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is My Son, whom I love. With Him I am well pleased. Listen to Him." And if there's anything that we can ever learn, because sometimes we have these incredible emotional experiences that help us see the glory of God, and we wonder, what do we do with this? How do we then proceed? Well, the answer is very simple. It's the exact same thing that happened to the disciples. They had an encounter with God. It was amazing and incredible. And the response to that is not, let's just build some shelters and stay and let's just, you know, experience this forever and ever. But instead, go and listen to what God has to say. And that was one thing that the disciples were really struggling with. And it's something that you and I continue to struggle with. If you are one of those people who says, oh yeah, Jesus says something, I just follow it and do it and believe it, I don't know if you've read really the entire Bible yet, because there is a lot of stuff in there that God says that you're like, I don't think I really want to follow that. And the answer is correct. You don't want to, but the answer still is the same. Listen to Him. Follow Him. Obey Him. Even when it's hard. Even when it's not glorifying to you. And this is going to be very similar to what happened in Matthew chapter 3, verse 7. That was the baptism of Jesus. And again, this is what starts to make me wonder that, again, the help that God is providing to Jesus Himself. Jesus is about to go the way of the cross and about to suffer terrible things. And at the baptism, God spoke also, saying, "This is My Son. Please listen to Him. You've got to follow what He says." So the other Gospels actually have a lot more about the transfiguration itself, but Matthew has this extended discussion about what happens right afterwards. Because isn't that what you're really wanting to know? What happens afterwards? Well, first of all, when the disciples heard this, they fell face ground to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," He said, "don't be afraid." They just had this incredible encounter. And I love it that it even says that Jesus didn't just speak to them, but He actually had to touch them. They're like laying on the ground, and He had to come over, and He's like, no, it's okay. It's okay. I think these people also needed that extra assurance and that touch. And so as they're face down, this voice has just boomed out from the thing. There's this cloud around. Jesus is glowing. There's two other strangers on top. "I think I am about to die." The cloud represented the glory of God in the Old Testament. They were led through the Old Testament wilderness through a pillar of cloud. And so this cloud was the glory of God present here on earth. And so they think we are dead people. And all of a sudden, they get touched on the shoulder, and it's Jesus, and when they look up, it's just Him, and everyone else is gone, and the mountaintop experience is over. Verse 9, as they were coming down the mountain, when they came, only one chuckle, they were coming down the mountain, as they were coming down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, "Don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." Are you kidding me? Do you know what I'm going to do the moment I show up to those other disciples? Oh my gosh, I'm going to tell, you missed this. Oh my gosh, there was Jesus and I think it was Moses. And then of course the other disciples would be sitting there like, oh really? Oh, you got this special treatment? Oh, that's really nice. They'd be this jealous because that's, all those disciples do that. Yeah, but that's what I did. But Jesus like, don't say a word. And again, it's one of those things, it's called the messianic secret. It shows up all throughout the Gospels. It's one of those weird things that Jesus tells people, don't say I'm the Messiah, then everyone runs out, doesn't listen to Jesus, tells everyone that the Messiah is there, and then he has to deal with the issue. And now the reverse is true. Jesus has been glorified, and he tells all of us, go and tell people that I am the Son of God and I'm the Messiah. And all of us are like, we can keep a secret. We'll just keep that between us. We won't say anything out there. Yeah, it's this weird reversal. How come that? I don't understand that. But I'm the exact same way. Sometimes I get very secretive about it. But here, Jesus is telling him, don't say anything. We're not going to cause jealousy. Don't say anything until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. And then the disciples, they decided to start asking some theological questions. So the disciples asked him, why then do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first? And this was something from the book of Malachi, a very important thing. Even nowadays, if you go to a Jewish Seder dinner, there will always be an extra seat at the table because they're waiting for Elijah to come because the Messiah still hasn't shown up. And so they know that Elijah is supposed to show up based upon Malachi. Elijah will show up. And they're like, well, wait a second. We just saw this, and I didn't see no Elijah, except he was there. But is that the Elijah, or what is going on? And Jesus, we're really, really confused. And of course, I sometimes wonder if Jesus just thinks of our questions as just dumb, prattling questions. We get so focused on such things that are so immaterial to the rest of our lives. Always cracks me up. Why does Elijah must come first? And Jesus replied, to be sure, Elijah comes and will restore all things. But I tell you, Elijah has already come. They didn't recognize him, but have done to him everything they wished, in the same way the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands. Again, he doesn't answer the question, but then they figure out, then the disciples understood that he was talking to them about John the Baptist. And this was one of those things that, again, would be very shocking, as they're like, wait a second, John the Baptist got killed. And Jesus is like, yeah, same thing will happen to the Son of Man. They're like, wait, Son of Man, that's you, right? Yeah, that's me. I'm Son of Man. So wait, you're going to die too? Yes. But no, I thought you were going to come and restore all things. Yeah, I'm going to restore all things. Not in a way that you think, but in a way that's going to be way more important. I'm not going to restore things and just make your life hunky-dory here on earth. I'm going to restore you back into a salvation relationship with me. And that is way more important than anything else that you're experiencing. And I think that's something for all of us. Yes, Carl. Yes, Elijah has already come, and you guys didn't recognize him, and it was John the Baptist, because they knew that there had to be a forerunner, someone who had to come before Jesus showed up. Now, what I'm telling you, there will be other churches, other denominations who will disagree with what I have just stated. They will say, no, Elijah still hasn't yet to come, and what they do is they quote backwards to where people came to John the Baptist, and they said, wait a second, are you Elijah? And John the Baptist said, nope, not Elijah. So now the question is, who the voice out of the cloud, did it say, listen to John the Baptist, he got it right? Or did he say, listen to Jesus? See, I think that John the Baptist wasn't really considering himself as that forerunner, but God was using him in that way. And that's why Jesus had to make it clear, Elijah has come. And that's John the Baptist before the great and dreadful day of the Lord, which is when death is conquered, when Satan is destroyed, when evil is put in his place, when my people are now gathered, not just Jewish people who have followed me for these past centuries, but also these Gentiles that are now coming in that believe in me. These are people that I'm also gathering in there. And so Elijah came. So what do we do? How do we handle when things go wrong in our lives? How do we handle when things aren't the way we want them to be? How do we handle it when we have the doubts and the questions? How do we handle these things? Sometimes we want to go chasing back up the mountain. We're like, Jesus, can we just put up a shelter up there? And just like, all we want to do is just sit with you. And it's truly, if you think about it, if you are just up on the mountainside with God for the rest of your life, how is God going to use you to affect the people around you? Sometimes God takes us from the mountaintop and drives us down the hill back into the mundane, back into the ordinary, back into your jobs that you absolutely detest, back into your neighborhoods with that neighbor who is always giving you problems, back into your schools where there's the bullies and the cheaters, back into your lives so that you can then become the light. Because when you spend time with God, you will change. When you spend time with God, people around you will know it. And it'll be encouragement to you, and you will be a light to the people around. So question, how is God going to use you this week? We know he does. I always like to think of these gatherings as mini mountaintop experiences. I don't know about you, but I could sit and worship all day. Some of you are like, nope, I don't really like that part, but I could sit and read God's word all day. Or some of you say, no, I can't really do that, but I could play with kids all day. We could. We enjoy this. But you all have to leave. You all have to go. Back down the mountain. Back into your lives. And when we go, we listen to what God has to say. And we follow him. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the story of the Transfiguration and the incredible encouragement that it gives to us as individuals. And now I'm also certain the strength it gave to Jesus as he was about to go the way of the cross. And I pray that as we go through our days, as we struggle, as we suffer, as we have to deal with a lot of things in our life, that we would know you, feel you, experience you, but not become addicted to those emotional experiences, but instead be thankful and grateful for them, and then look for those times that we're going to shine your light to the people around. Lord, I know that it was Peter, James, and John, and I'd have a feeling it's because they just didn't really know things very well, and sometimes I just feel the exact same way. Like, I'm really trying to understand this. I'm really trying to follow, but it can get so hard. It can become so difficult following you. So that's why we enjoy spending time with you, Lord. And thank you that even Peter, after this whole thing, is still a knucklehead. He still has no idea what he's doing. But at the end of the day, you tell him, Peter, I love you, and you're going to go feed my people. I love you, and I'm going to restore you when you fall. Peter, I love you even when you don't acknowledge me in front of others. Peter, even though you stumble and struggle, even though after having that incredible experience, I love you. And those are those same words to us. Lord, I know there's been many a times I have seen your glory, and I know that you are there, and then I walk into the drab, dreary colors of my world, and I wonder, are you even there? And my faith can be so fickle, it can be so flighty, and yet you are always quick to restore. So I pray that as we prepare our hearts for communion, that it would be a time that we can enjoy once again your presence in our lives because of Jesus our Savior. Amen.